Welcome to Uncut, a special edition of the Conversations podcast by Texas Scorecard, where we're sitting down with real candidates running for statewide office and asking them real questions, unfiltered. You can find more at texasscorecard.com. Well, hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us. I'm Brandon Waltons, the managing editor here at Texas Scorecard. And right now we're being joined by state senator and current candidate for Texas Land Commissioner, Don Buckingham. Senator Buckingham, thank you so much for joining us.
It is my pleasure to be here with you today.
So for folks who have maybe not been following this race that closely, give people a sense of your background, why you got into the Texas legislature, and why you're now looking at the land office.
Absolutely. You know, the land office is literally the tip of the spear to defend our border with the state lands that are on the border, our history in oil and gas against what the liberal left is trying to do. And so obviously with the vacancy, with the commissioner moving on, I really felt like we needed somebody in there that was experienced and conservative who could really lead that fight and bang that drum.
And when you look at the land office, I think we'll get into some of it, but you know, a lot of people don't even really know what the land office is. I mean, can you kind of give people maybe a 30,000 foot view of what it is that the land commissioner does on a daily basis?
Sure. You know, I would tell you almost no one knows what the general land office does. So the general land office actually predates the office of the governor. So when Texas had lived under its Six Flags, they had to figure out who owned what, which they started the land office to determine that. They became the keeper of the maps, therefore they became the keeper of Texas history, which is where that came from. We obviously steward 13 million acres of state lands spread all over the state, a lot of it in the Permian Basin and West Texas. And so therefore we are the largest mineral owner in the state. We do a ton of oil and gas. And with the revenues that we generate from oil and gas and other activities on state lands, then we fund education and the veterans programs. It's constitutionally dedicated. And we do all the hurricane recovery and flood mitigation. And actually, most people don't even know that the first part of the border wall was built on GLO lands on top of a flood control levee. So where there's a will, there's a way. And that was the first section of the border wall we had, and we look forward to doing everything we can to get the wall up on the state lands.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because obviously over the last year or so, the border has been a major issue that people have been paying attention to, as we've seen illegal aliens surge across the southern border in Texas. What else can the land office be doing? What steps can be taken from the land office, do you think, to aid in cracking down on the surge of illegal aliens?
You know, that's a really good question. And I can tell you, we'll be looking for every opportunity to do that. So much of it, of course, is in the hands of the legislature. And of course, most of it's in the hands of the federal government. But we'll be looking for every opportunity to try and get complete operational control of the border where we can.
A big issue that has put the land office in the spotlight over the last few years has been the project to reimagine the Alamo. What are your thoughts? If you were the land commissioner, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, you know, what would you have done? What will your approach be to the Alamo and to any other major monuments in Texas?
You know, as the only one who passed any legislation protecting our monuments last session, and as the one who threw down the legal challenge to keep the cenotaph where it should be, out in front, not moved around back like they wanted to, there will be no reimagining our Texas history under my watch. I think we do all recognize, every time I'm with someone who sees the Alamo for the first time, they would kind of show up and go, is that it? I thought it was bigger. So, you know, blocking the street was probably a very good idea. I don't know that anyone's going to miss the Wax Museum, making it a
Ripley's,
making it a meaningful experience of the sacred, almost holy place that it is in Texas history, I think is all great. And so we'll be taking a very good look at that. What I did find something really disturbing when I was visiting there a month or so ago is that the limestone walls are actually pulling the moisture out of the ground, and it's dissolving them from within, kind of like if you have limestone around your saltwater pool.
Right.
And so they're losing about 60 pounds of stone shed internally a year alone, and that's been going on for a long time. So there's some big issues that we need to get in and get fixed, and we need to make it a meaningful experience, and then be sure it has the reverence that it deserves.
You talked about passing legislation in the Senate to protect monuments. What do you think that legislation and, you know, I could list off some other priorities of the Republican Party of Texas. That was one of them this year. Why do you think so many of them failed to make it all the way to the governor's desk? I mean, you've been in the Senate for a little while, so you've seen the process up close.
Right. It's funny because in the Senate, I feel like we pass them over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. The fix to the voter integrity bill, for example. Like, you know, all these things, uh-huh. And then somehow it just never... A lot of it doesn't seem to get through. So I honestly don't understand why that is.
We're talking about, you've been among the lawmakers calling for a fourth special session, I believe, to address vaccine mandates. Why do you think there's been hesitancy to have lawmakers back in Austin?
You know, I don't really understand that either. And that's obviously the governor's call. I was really excited yesterday when the Supreme Court basically overthrew all the mandates except for healthcare workers, which I was very disappointed in that mm-hmm. part. But at least we have some protections for workers who don't want to get vaccinated. Mm-hmm.
So you believe the legislature should pass a law banning vaccine mandates, right?
I'm opposed to mandates in general.
Mm-hmm. Going back to the land office itself, one of the areas where we often see the land office and see the land commissioner out in front is during natural disasters. We obviously saw it during Hurricane Harvey. Is there anything that you see that the land office could do better, that you would do under your watch to better prepare and better assist during natural disasters?
You know, I think with something like a natural disaster, and, you know, I grew up on roughly the coast, League City, mm-hmm. between Houston and Galveston until I was in about seventh grade, and then lived on Galveston Island for 11 years. So mm-hmm. I've kind of been through the hurricane thing a couple times. In fact, I have the desk that was washed down the stairs of my family's home when the 1900 storm surge hit their house. But, you know, when you're in the middle of a disaster, help can never come fast enough. Mm-hmm. I think, and there have been a lot of articles about, we probably have a lot of room to improve in our hurricane recovery. Mm-hmm. And so we'll be looking at that very seriously. And the good news is there's actually a wealth of knowledge and folks who've worked for the General Land Office. And then, of course, you know, Jerry Patterson's mm-hmm. around, and David Dewhurst, and former commissioners. So we plan on, should we win, which is the plan, mm-hmm. Pulling together a really strong transition team and identifying why we're seeing dysfunction at certain levels of the agency and getting that pulled together.
When you're out going to events and going to forums, what are some of the biggest concerns you're hearing right now from Texans?
You know, Texans are concerned about this humanitarian crisis that is happening at the border. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's fascinating to be down in South Texas and in the border region, because I really feel like the Biden administration's policies are, a lot of the folks who've been Democrats their whole life down there, mm-hmm. they're angry. And they're telling me, I am not a Democrat anymore, I'm a Republican now, because the Democrats don't obviously care anything about me. And you realize how harmful this open border policy is. It is literally funding the most violent gangs in Texas and the most violent cartels in Mexico, because they're making more money on human trafficking than they are on drugs. Mm-hmm. And so when you look, you've got all of a sudden the gangs now are coming to drive the people once they get across. And that's why you're seeing a step up in a lot of the violence. And so, I mean, it is an absolute disaster. Mm-hmm. And you know, in the legislature, we were working on everything we could possibly come up with to give law enforcement tools, getting the Texas military down there, increasing the funding. I mean, obviously, we're going to have to keep fighting that fight.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of that is focused on building the wall. You talked a little bit about that earlier. Obviously, there's the argument from some that, well, there's a lot of land down there that is privately owned and it would have to be taken by eminent domain. What's your opinion on that?
Well, I believe the federal government has already taken it mm-hmm. by eminent domain. They're currently refusing to give it back, which is hindering some of our ability to build a wall ourselves. Mm-hmm. They're not going to do it. But yes, I mean, we're, as a private property owner, we're all very worried about eminent domain taking the private land. But what I find down there is the majority of landowners want the wall on their property. Mm-hmm. And that it does, and obviously a physical barrier doesn't stop everybody. It might mm-hmm. slow them down. It might channel them differently to go across a different space, but it doesn't stop everybody. You need the boots on the ground. You need the technology. you know, we need to get rid of the lures that bring people here, you know, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think, it's just shocking what's going on there.
So would you be in favor of, people have a lot of different opinions on this, of a physical wall the entire length of the Texas border or just in some spots? What's your thought?
I think there's some spots where a wall wouldn't make any sense. You've mm-hmm. got some canyons apparently that flash flood pretty significantly all the time. So mm-hmm. the wall's not going to stand in places like that, for example, or where you already have a really tall cliff on one side of the river mm-hmm. or on our side of the river. Things like that. So I think there's some places, where hands down the wall makes perfect sense. I think in some places it doesn't make as much sense and you need more of the technology boots on the ground type of thing.
You touched on this a little bit earlier, but the land office, of course, is in charge of the permanent school fund. Mm-hmm. People don't really think of land office and education. Are there any tools that you see that the land office could do in regards to the permanent school fund, in regards to kind of education in Texas in general?
Sure. I mean, you know, and we would all like our property taxes to be a whole lot lower.
Sure.
And so when you look at what kind of contribution the general land office could make, I mean, if we can continue to grow that fund, that's a real means of mm-hmm. funding public education and relying less on property taxes. So I think you're always looking for ways to maximize your revenue. Oil and gas is great, but it's a boom and a bust. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of field, and there will someday, maybe long, long, long away, you know, we'll have different energy forms. So, mm-hmm. Or the oil will be gone or whatever it is. So you have to always be looking for new ways to generate that maximum revenue. Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you mentioned it, property taxes, because this, you know, Texas, we know, is one of the highest property tax burdens of any state. And you've been in the legislature, so you've seen these efforts. Why is it that it seems that we can't actually put into place a plan to actually lower people's overall property tax burden or even, lead to eventually abolishing them? Why is that so difficult?
Yeah, you know, it's hard because we have, I think, accomplished some pretty significant reforms. Mm-hmm. You know, the problem is you change the curve. You know, we did do some people's property taxes should be. Some people, I have talked to people who their bill has gone down a little bit with mm-hmm. the reforms you've made. You know, it tends to be a couple $100s, mm-hmm. which translates into billions of dollars in the state budget mm-hmm. and increased spending, mm-hmm. which is always kind of it's a difficult mesh. Mm-hmm. When you look at, and I'm all for trying to figure out how to lower it even more. When we look at, you know, moving it all to a consumption tax, mm-hmm. that number really runs out at about a 23% sales tax, which.
That's pretty significant.
That's very significant. And so I think that's kind of one of the main things that we brush up against. You know, I'm a small government girl. I'm like, the government costs us so much money because it's so darn big, you know. Mm-hmm. So how is it that we trim it, which it's incredibly hard to get rid of something once you've created it, I've learned. Mm-hmm. Shockingly difficult. But, you know, we'll keep working on that and hopefully we'll get there.
Mm-hmm. One last issue that we hear a lot about, and especially I've heard a lot about over the last couple of years, has been mandates under COVID. Obviously, the state's been, and I guess in March, it'll be 2 years on a state of emergency for the coronavirus. We've got, you know, executive orders, the legislature's come and gone this year, and we're still in a state of emergency, right? Mm-hmm. What do you think the legislature needs to do, or maybe shouldn't do, in regards to reining in executive authority?
You know, I thought we had a really good bill in the Senate. I believe it was Senator Birdwell's bill, that mm-hmm. The executive authority in an emergency was time limited, and it went over that time, it automatically triggered a session where the legislature could say yes, it can continue, or no, it should stop. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's the government's responsibility or even a possibility to keep people from getting a virus. I think it's the government's responsibility to educate people on here's ways to protect yourself, or here are good treatments, or here's where testing is, mm-hmm. or whatever. But I think we kind of lost it when we gained this mindset that somehow government policies or shutdowns or whatever were going to keep you from getting a virus, which mm-hmm. we have seen, in my opinion, not to be true.
Right.
So we've had the biggest surges under the biggest shutdowns. So
moving now to the campaign itself, there's quite a few candidates in this race because it's an open seat. Tends to kind of happen that way. You've got the endorsement of President Trump, though. Does that do you think that helps you right now when you're on the campaign trail?
I think it helps a lot. We have incredible endorsements. Mm-hmm. Trump, Rick Perry, Dan Patrick, Ted Cruz, mm-hmm. basically all of the most conservative senators, really strong groups, Homeschool Coalition, Texas Values. I mean, we are very, very excited about our endorsements. A lot of our grassroots leaders and conservative groups. So mm-hmm. we're excited about that.
What do you think, because this is the question we get all the time, you've probably heard it. Why do you think it is that so many people get elected to an office and then don't follow through on their promises? And what will stop you from doing that?
Well, you know, if you look at me, I would tell you I'm saying the same things now that I said in my first race, mm-hmm. that I worked as hard to accomplish as possible in the legislature. You know, and it's a couple, there are a couple hurdles to that. One is that sometimes you get in and what sounded like a good idea before you knew what all they'd considered and what had happened, you realize, oh, there's a reason they do it X or Y or whatever. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it just takes a while to get people used to ideas. You know, it takes a few sessions to introduce a topic, educate people, mm-hmm. figure out why they should care about it and they should go that way. So, but no, I think, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, what candidates shouldn't just be able to say it, they should prove it. Mm-hmm. And so when I look at my record, I'm like, look, you know, I led to keep the Electoral College independent when the power structure wanted to tie their hands after Trump was elected. You know, mm-hmm. I led to put the teeth in the sanctuary city bills. We had the big first property tax bill. I offered the amendment so that rural folks got the benefits of those reforms, not just urban folks. Mm-hmm. You know, the Alamo Cenotaph we talked about, but just a lot of things that, you know, you get in there and you have as much effect on everything you possibly can the way you want to get it done. Mm-hmm. But in the end, you have to get a majority of everybody to agree with you. And sometimes that's harder to accomplish than you think it should be.
Right. Now, for folks who want to follow your campaign or get involved, where can they go to go do that?
DonBuckingham.com.
DonBuckingham.com. Easy enough. Well, thank you so much, Senator Buckingham, for joining us.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Uncut, a special edition of Conversations with Texas Scorecard. You can also go to texasscorecard.com to get more journalism and stories just like this. If you like today's episode, please rate and review this podcast on whatever podcasting platform you listen on.